your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome. I'm here today with Chris Zahonik. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I enjoy having you here on the show. I know you've got a busy week coming up. You've got an event here just in a few days, and I definitely appreciate your time. But you're running Project Boone and Firm Media and five or six other things, if I remember right. Why don't you tell everyone what it is you're involved with?
My wife and I own some for-profit businesses. We own a restaurant in Southern California called the Hitch Burger Grill. We just got an email yesterday mostly approving our letter of intent to open a second location. We had multiple locations in the past, but rebranded, came up with some new menu ideas, and really started refocusing on doing something with sort of this idea of going from good to great. And we're in the process of opening a second location there. And for 14 years now, I've owned a digital marketing agency that focuses on doing web design, search engine optimization, video photography, stuff like that for mostly plastic surgeons across the country. It's a boutique agency that offers sort of market exclusivity. So one major plastic surgeon in each market, which keeps us pretty busy. And then I think about 10 years ago, actually 9 years ago, we felt grateful for, you know, if you count back the years, we started the businesses, the restaurant and the marketing agency in June of 2008. In June of 2008, obviously the market crashed in October, and we had to scratch and claw to make those businesses work. And the marketing firm grew 64% year over year the first 3 years we were open, in spite of the sluggish economy. It took probably 7-8 years to get out of that mess. And we just felt grateful. So we wanted to kind of give back a little bit. And so we started Project Boone, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, which I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about here in the United States, doing events, holiday-based events here in the United States. And then my wife is from a small village in Guadalajara, just outside of Guadalajara, Mexico, where we started doing events down there each year too. So that's been about 9 years that we've been doing about 12 to 14 holiday-based events a year in two countries.
That's really cool. I know we talked earlier this week, and I really love what you were doing for your events. With Project Boone, you know, you're feeding people for Thanksgiving, and you were talking about you being in the music industry, and you put together your first event for Project Boone, and how many people showed up?
2,500 people showed up to eat Thanksgiving, a Thanksgiving meal.
But you were so used to having 30,000 people at a concert, you're like, oh, 2,500 people, that's okay. And, you know, from most of the people in the nonprofit world, the nonprofit side, you hear 2,500 at an event, and that is a world-class event, but you were like, I guess I can do better next time.
Yeah, I didn't do stadium events and things like that, but I did do very large festivals and stuff where it wasn't uncommon to see 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people at the event. A lot of times I was working with a lot of the talent that was there, and also involved in, like, you know, everything from merchandising all the way over to catering, right? You know, that's just a lot of moving parts, right? And then it's the music business. Not everybody's sober. Yeah, I mean, the variables are completely different. So you show up and do a nonprofit event, and 2,500 people show up, and most of them are grateful.
And sober.
Most of them. But the reality is it's not the same animal. So a lot of times it goes smoother. I guess it is technically hectic if you haven't done it before. But I remember standing in the park the very first Thanksgiving event we did. It's a long series of stories about how we got to the point where I was the guy producing a holiday-based event in the middle of a park in Southern California. And I was standing in the park on the stage where we had just done the opening ceremonies, and was looking around at all the people in the park. And over on this end, you have probably 30 or 40 tables of people sitting around eating. On this end of the park, you had vendors and people getting flu shots and haircuts and eye exams. And then over on in the middle area in front of the stage, you had kids getting face painting and all kinds of stuff like that going on. And I looked around and it was just a sea of people in this park. And I thought to myself, this started in my head as an idea. That blew my mind. It was probably the most rewarding moment I've ever had in giving back since I've been doing it, where I just thought, wow, like ideas are so powerful.
Oh, absolutely. It's the idea that sparks this burning desire within us, but then you actually, you know, take this next step and you lay out this plan and what your vision might look like, and then you start taking steps towards that. And then when it, you know, manifests and comes into creation in front of you as you, you know, envisioned it, or hopefully, you know, near to what you've envisioned it, you're like, man, we put something really special together here. And I mean, you opened up talking about, you know, doing holiday meals, but it's really more than a meal with what you guys put together.
So for me, I personally, and this is kind of, this may or may not be, this just is what it is, right? Like I was in the music business, and as a kid, when I grew up, I think I talked about this before, right? Like my friends, you know, all their heroes were like Steve Garvey or whatever, you know, baseball players or Joe Montana, or, you know, they're all got subscriptions to like Sports Illustrated magazine. And then as I got a little older, it was certain bands or whatever, right? And for me, I mean, as a little kid, I remember being fascinated with like Martin Luther King or Muhammad Ali, right? Like a sports figure, but like I was more inspired by what he was doing outside the ring. When I got older and I got into music, right, like arts and entertainment, I was more inspired by the bands that were found themselves testifying in front of Congress for one reason or another, and than I was about the ones that were on the cover of a magazine. And so I just kind of always intuitively knew there was the part of me that felt the same way. Like if I was given some leverage in my life at some point, and I tell people this all the time, when I was younger, I didn't have any real leverage in the world. So I had kind of like a spoon to move dirt, you know, like that was my thing. And then I got a little older and I had some more leverage, and then it was like a shovel, right? And today I feel like I have maybe, you know, a couple dump trucks and a backhoe, right? Like I could use a fleet of trucks and a fleet of backhoes, but right now I got like a backhoe and a truck. So I'm able to just, I have more leverage. I can move more dirt. And I just feel like, you know, one of my, like, I don't know who said it, but it's a quote that I really like the more your business grows, the more your business grows, so does your responsibility to others. And that might, could be your employee, could be your employees, could be the community that supports you, could be the people that buy the products that you put out, whatever that is. And that's something that I've always tried to keep my, just stay open to, you know?
Oh yeah. It's not so much that, you know, this football team is the champions, but you're the champions of the football league. And what else are you doing for the greater good is what you brought up to me in our pre-interview. You know, you're the champs, but you're the champs in what? You just good at boxing, or are you good at something else?
Yes. Right. Like, you know, I don't know. This is a debate that could go on forever, but like when they talk about the greatest of all time, Floyd Mayweather gets compared to Muhammad Ali. And I'm like, what? You know, like I made a lot of money doesn't usually stack up for me in my mind with, I took a lot of risks or I did a lot of things for the greater good.
Absolutely. It's one thing to say that you're good at a sport, or it's another thing to say that you're good in business, or, you know, just general beauty. It's one thing to say you're pretty, but you're pretty. Well, what else do you have to offer? Yeah, you're good at sports, but you're a complete jerk in the street. Like, why is that thing? Or, you know, you're in Southern California. Yeah, congrats on being in a blockbuster movie, but you just treated that waiter that's trying to make it, you know, put his life together, you just treated them like garbage. Like, congrats on being rich, famous, pretty, whatever the thing is. But what else do you have to offer? What else are you doing behind the scenes? You know, we lost Kobe Bryant earlier this year, and you know, I wasn't exactly a huge basketball fan. I knew who he was, and I knew a few things, and someone was like, well, I'm kind of sad, you know, like Kobe's gone. And you know, my initial reaction, I was like, really? I mean, like, you know, a basketball star yeah, whatever. A family man, that hurts, you know, with young kids, absolutely. And I did a little bit more digging and saw all the things that he was doing off the court. And I was like, man, that is a huge hit to the community. As someone that, you know, used the attention that they had and the money that they made to really make an impact for other people. And that's, you know, one of the reasons where we really enjoy the nonprofit world, I think you and I, is because you're doing more than just taking care of yourself. You're doing more outside of your own being, outside of your own scope. And you're really starting to make an impact on the world around you for good. And that's fantastic. But you, when you bring your people together and you do, you know, holiday meals, you're not just feeding them. You're bringing in other partners. You're bringing in dental care, medical care. And like, how did you come up with adding all those other little things to your food service?
So I guess that's what I was starting to say a little bit ago. I think I got sidetracked, but the point I was making is that like I'm from Los Angeles. I worked in Hollywood until I was 33 years old. I worked in an industry where it was just customary to wake up in the morning and start talking about yourself all day. You're either talking about yourself or name dropping all day, and It's a very self-absorbed reality. I grew up I was young, right? So I was living in a pretty self-absorbed reality. And I got to say that when I came out of the music business at 33 years old, I was a little, I refer to it as a little soul sick, right? Just some things were missing. I had taken way more than I had given. And I think in growing up in Los Angeles and working in Hollywood, it's not uncommon to like, to sort of give and do it for PR or, I refer to them as like the selfie volunteers, right? Like we're going to have 700 people volunteer at our event, but like 30 of them are going to come just for their selfies and they're not really going to want to work. They're not really going to want to, you know.
And they're there to look good. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I know that there has to be more to just get to helping someone than just giving them something. Mm-hmm. And so in an effort to do our events and meet a need for me where I really just wanted to give back. I wanted to give to the greater good. I wanted to, you know, I think I've told you this before, Project Boon, the word boon, it's a Thai word that means the merit that you get for doing a good deed. There's lots of, there's a version of the word boon in English and in Chinese, I think. But where I got it from was from a Buddhist monk, actually. And he had said the word boon and, you know, talking about it. So it's the merit that you get for doing a good deed. And so what I thought was, well, years and years ago, I went on Twitter and I signed up with the name Project Boon, not knowing that years later it would be the name of the nonprofit that we ended up starting. But the idea was that, like, I don't think we're going to ever be able to eradicate homelessness or struggle or any of those things from people. But I do think that we could possibly create communities, more communities of people that were giving back and rally people together so we could sort of lessen the intensity or the impact of that struggle in people's lives. So it's funny, and this is a little strange, but we do these events for people, right? And as we're doing the events for the people, most people think the event is for the underserved families that are coming, that they're the recipients of the gifts that the volunteers have to offer. But the events, when Project Boon's mission is actually to create opportunities for the volunteers. So it's funny, I tell people all the time, we're showing up at an event and we're going to give out toys, right? We're going to do that in 2 days from now. We're going to give out toys to kids. They're going to come through in a drive-through event. Community members have been donating toys at our for-profit businesses and making financial donations, and people have been going to buy toys. But the moment, and they get really worked up about the ins and outs of the event. And I always say, you guys don't understand, like the Project Boon's mission is to create something for the volunteers. So the moment we show up on site, or the moment, you know, weeks before when people were bringing toys in and things like that, we were already accomplishing the company's mission. We activated the community to stop thinking about themselves just for a little bit. So this is why we added the component of, because you tell people like, hey, I want to start a nonprofit and I'm going to give away food and I'm going to give away shoes. And they're like, well, that's not very sustainable. I don't really want to donate to you, right? That came up a lot, right? Is your business model sustainable? And I thought, well, what we can do is I can still have the thing that I want, which is to feed the people, bring the people together, give the kids toys, see the smile on the kid's face, right? But what I'll also do is I'll invite other people who can give them things that'll help them make their life better, not just that moment better. Like the eye exams and the glasses and the flu shots and the haircuts and the maybe the clothes closet that we provided for a wardrobe for work, or consultations with recovery centers if you need to, somebody needs to get into treatment or something like that. Not just giving them stuff, but also creating opportunities for them to connect with other businesses in the community, nonprofits in the community that offer services that might be able to help them out of whatever situation they're in.
I love it. I know that I had Brian Paul on. I think he's episode number 3, doing great things at Veterans for Life USA. But you know, his motto, and it really, all the nonprofits that I see working hard and doing great things, it's in alignment with his motto, which is stronger together. It's not just about Chris. It's not just about Project Boone. It's legitimately about the community and creating those opportunities and creating those events and creating those partnerships and working together to really, truly, and honestly give back. And that's a much greater meaning than just filling a need or fundraising for your organization. It's fundraising for the team, for the community, for the group, for everyone as a whole. But you're in Southern California and COVID mitigations abound. You had an event, you had it planned. I can't remember if it was Easter. Was it Easter when you shifted to the drive-through event?
Yeah. Easter was the first event we canceled.
Yeah. Tell us what that looks like and what you were able to do in partnership with your businesses to make this run smoothly.
Did I tell you I was nominated for an award out here, entrepreneurial award called, and it's the first time they did it this year. It's a lot of different awards to give out, but this year's they had one specific category called COVID Hero. And it was for people who had to reinvent their businesses because of COVID and so on and so forth. And so I was nominated because of this thing, the story I'm going to tell you. But I'll tell you, when it happened, I didn't think it was any big deal at all. Like I literally was, I mean, we own some restaurants. The restaurants have drive-thrus. And I'm sure you can remember, I mean, when things started to shut down, it was scary, right? Like people didn't know what they could touch. Everybody's, you know, I mean, it was strange. And so we had this restaurant with a drive-thru and people are going through the drive-thru. And we modified our hours to close earlier on Sundays because we didn't have as many bodies coming into the restaurant and, you know, not sure if we're going to make it. And I just said to the board chair, I said, hey, this COVID thing's happening. We're not going to be able to do these holiday-based events in parks and stuff. So theoretically, I'll just sit here on the curb till they open the park back up, right? Like, I'm going to just kick rocks. I don't really have a solution. I don't know what to do. And the board chair, Joel Clellan, circled back with me and was like, so what are we going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I guess the restaurant's open, the drive-thru's open, but I guess we can do stuff through the drive-thru. Now, this is the issue, right? Like, if I do a Thanksgiving meal for 3,000 people, for 2,000 people, one of my restaurants owns has a barbecue pit in the back that cooks 20 turkeys at a time. I only have to get 40 turkeys donated and cook those 40 turkeys. So the two sessions of cooking, so maybe 8 or 16 hours of cooking, right? And then they shred the turkeys and then we feed. You can feed 2,000 people with those 40 turkeys, right? But if I decide I want to give 400 families a Thanksgiving meal through a drive-thru event, like a full meal, I got to come up with 400 turkeys. Totally different animal, right? So we were like, well, it's Easter. Why don't we do Easter baskets through the drive-thru at the restaurant? And then we'll do groceries. I was like, well, if I give a gallon of milk away to 300 to 400 families, I got to come up with 300 to 400 gallons of, this is a total, I've never done this before.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a little bit differently when you have to do it all through the drive-thru. I mean, did you guys bring in like Chick-fil-A drive-thru experts to expedite how you were getting everything done in time?
That's a funny story. Like we ended up doing Easter. And then my executive assistant here at Affirm Media, I don't know if I did tell you or not, but there's no paid employees for Project Boone. They're all paid by the for-profits. So my executive assistant here at the marketing firm found a program that was going on through it's like supporting farmers, right? Like because certain things were happening because of COVID. I don't know the whole story, so I'm probably going to butcher it, but I'm going to give you the essence of what happened. There was something going on with overages from coming from farms. And what happened was Congress or the government basically said to these farmers here in California, rather than you're not going to be able to sell that stuff. Don't throw it away. We'll give you money for it. And then you ship it to these different communities like nonprofits and stuff, right? So there were these truckloads of like, they called them dairy baskets, right? There were boxes coming in with like milk and butter and cheese. And, you know, they were only good for about 4 or 5 days left. So you had to pick them up and then like get them to the families so they could use them. And she got us on lists for stuff like that. And, you know, we had to get all the stuff trucked in and then find some place to store it in our restaurant, right? And get it pushed out. But we figured out ways to get volunteers to stay socially distant, make signs like on Mother's Day, like Happy Mother's Day. And then we'd give up flowers to the mothers through the car window and then give them groceries. And, you know, same with Easter. And then I think we did Easter and then we did Mother's Day. And then we realized this is amazing and painful at the same time. When you get 300 to 400 cars to go through a drive-through, I didn't know this. I just was like, oh, we're just going to usher them through the drive-through. We'll snake them through the parking lot so there's not too many cars out in the street. 300 to 400 cars is like miles of cars.
Right? it's not a small amount of cars at all.
Something I had never considered, right? Because we had a guy came out and he was like, I'm going to get some drone footage of this. And I was watching it and I was like, oh my gosh. So then, you know, consequently, the neighbors are like, hey, like my driveway's blocked. Like nobody's happy that we're...
Well, the people that are receiving the goods are happy, but everyone else, yeah.
So we've stepped it up. We're now strategically partnering with cities and school districts where we're involving like local PD to manage traffic. And, but when we did, we were just like, we're just going to do it. And it was kind of, there was some not great going on, but... We pulled it off.
But, you know, you take the idea, you spark the idea, you figure out a way to get the food that you need funneled into where you're going. You get the people all to get there and you do the event. And sometimes that's all you need. And it sounds like it worked-ish. Okay, for your first one, right? People came and they got the stuff that they needed, which was good. But there was all these secondary and tertiary effects where you had traffic problems and the neighbors are mad and all that stuff. But you took that experience and you did it. You didn't just have the idea. You implemented and you went with it. You tried it out. You saw what wasn't aligned. And like so many people that I've talked to, they get one bad report and they shut down and they stop. They get discouraged immediately. They feel like a failure. But you guys didn't do that. You're like, well, okay, now we're going to tweak this and we're going to figure out how to make this smoother for the next time. And you do and you tweak and you do and you tweak and you go and you keep going. And now you have the process. I mean, how was the Thanksgiving event with the drive-thru?
300 plus cars, full Thanksgiving meals. Sad part, I think probably more like 500 cars were in line. So we had to turn away quite a few. We just haven't developed the infrastructure to do more of things yet. Working on that. Refrigeration and warehouse space would be on my list of wants for Project Boone. But I mean, don't get me wrong. We have restaurants and we make the walk-in freezers and refrigerators work. It's just a lot of juggling and that kind of stuff, right? We did that and we got that many cars. And what we figured out now is we use parks where they have, some parks where there's like a little driveway inside the park before you get to the parking lot. So it kind of snakes through the park and like, okay, now we can get like three blocks of cars off the street and get them snaking through here. Right. And then we get them up to the place where we're going to distribute. We Y them at the end. We split them in two lines. Right. And then we have large tents distributing stuff out either side. So now we're giving three cars at a time stuff and we're just, hey, pop your trunk. There's signs along the way that tell them what to do when they get up there. People in masks directing traffic. 59 minutes. We put all those cars through that drive-thru on Thanksgiving.
And what would it look like for Easter? 3 hours. So you took a three-hour debacle. You crush it down to an hour. You made it efficient. You got people off the street. You got everyone fed. That's amazing. That's a great COVID success story. That's a great nonprofit success story. That's a great system success story. And really that highlights for a lot of organizations that I talk to that they tried one event and they weren't sure and they just never tried the event again. They never gave it another shot. They didn't try to tweak it and go forward with it. You know, the first book launch that we did with Books by Vets, I think there was more authors there than the people that came through to get books signed. And we did a little bit more promotion on the next time, and we got local government involved. We were in Oklahoma City, so we had state senators and state congressmen. And I think we had a county commissioner. We had two people from local media show up, and then everyone actually told all their friends and family and made the events and all that stuff. We sold out of books in 10 minutes. We had four speakers lined up. We had live music. We had a venue donated. And we had a fantastic event. But if we would have called it quits after the first event, we never would have got to event number two. And event number two was the magic that kept everything we were doing going. We needed event number two. And if we would have stopped at event number one, it never would have happened.
Yeah, no, I feel you. A lot of times the key to success is just to keep going, right? Right. I got a job when I got out of the music business working for a marketing agency. I was director of marketing and publicity for a label called Brainstorm Artists International in the 90s. That was one of my titles, among other things. I had investment from EMI Music Publishing to own an independent record company. But, you know, I didn't even know it at the time. But when I got out of the music business, I realized that my skill set was marketing and that I had a job. Because prior to that, I was like, I don't think I've ever really been employed and I wouldn't even know what to put on a resume. But when it came down to crunching a resume, I was like, wait a minute, I actually had a title once. It was director of marketing, right? So, the idea is to start, you know, we market these events and we get these people to them. And you're right. I mean, you know, if we fail, we just have to keep stepping up and augmenting it a little bit. This is something to know about events, right? Like I tell people all the time, like the director, sort of the development director for Project Boon is the executive assistant here at Firm Media. And these are some of the biggest things she's ever worked on. And she's the one calling all the shots, right? And I set her down the Thanksgiving event. She was super nervous. Like, I think I'm going to forget something, like blah, blah. And I said, look, we're doing a drive-through event. 300-400 people are going to come through and get turkeys and the sides. When we get to the event, you need 300 turkeys. You need 600 cans of corn, 600 cans of green beans, 300 boxes of stuffing, some dinner rolls, and a bag to put that stuff in. That's it. You could forget everything else and no one at the event's going to know that you forgot it. You know what I mean? You can forget the banner that has all the sponsors on it. You know what I mean? You can forget everything else and no one's going to know. So stop with all the like worrying about all the details. Like our goal is to get that food in that car with those people so they can go home and make that meal for their immediate family.
Yeah, it's the same with wedding. If all the details go wrong, as long as the two people that are getting married and the minister show up and they say I do and the paperwork signed, everything else can be a complete disaster. And there's a whole line of movies out there that detail that to the very end of exactly what that looks like. All that stuff doesn't matter. Is it nice to plan? Is it nice to think about? Are they nice to have? So yeah, there's lots of them. But just because it's a nice to have doesn't mean it's a have to have. And once you get those things dialed in, it's go time.
Yeah, I was telling you that like that job I got at the first job I got at that marketing agency. I mean, basically it was a sales job. I had to take marketing pitches to plastic surgeons and sell them on them, right? And I'd never really sold anything. I didn't know I had sold things, but I guess as a marketer, I've been selling my whole life, right? I went to, you know, take this job, and the level of rejection was just constant. And then when I started to get good at it, right? Like I took this job as a marketing consultant for an agency back in the day when Google wasn't even a thing yet, right? Like just having a website was a big deal. And so this agency was building websites for plastic surgeons and there wasn't a way to really find them on the internet or anything, right? I would go try to sell these products and they were like, well, you were going to go to the state of Texas and you're going to talk to these 60 doctors. And I was like, what's the annual revenue from the 60 doctors in the state of Texas? And they were like, oh, it's like, I think it was like $100,000 or something like that, or $600,000. Like nothing special. No one had really worked the area, right? So they sent me out there, and a year later, I had turned it into like a $2 or $3 million territory. But I had taken the number from 60 doctors down to 40. And the thing is, I just went out and I found the 40 that were willing to really get busy, right? And then I did what I said I was going to do with those doctors, right? And it grew that market exponentially. But in between, to get there, I was rejected so many times. And so I would start to talk to people that were trying something new. Like, for instance, my daughter's in the fashion industry, right? And a little shy. And I was able to sit down with her and be like, hey, something that I've learned over the years is like, if you get rejected and then you try something, get rejected and never try it again, you're never going to make it. Never. Like, you're never going anywhere, right? Like, if you want to put yourself out there with a fashion brand, you better, you know, get some thick skin. If you're putting stuff out there over and over, right? And I would think about it, like, to hit my monthly number as a sales guy, as an interim marketing consultant, to hit my monthly number, that means I had to get 10 yeses. And then I was like, wait a minute, but I had to get 80 no's, 90 no's, you know what I mean? And so I started looking at that with the events and things like that. When things would fail, I would be so devastated when I was younger. And now I'm like, well, whatever.
Well, I think the important thing is to really define failure, because I think if you get rejected, if you get told no, thank you, I don't think that's a failure unless you then quit. I think it is just a bump in the road. It's part of the process. And the only time you actually fail is when you hang it up. I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you don't quit, you win. If you don't quit, you win. I'm in the military. I've got more than 20 years in, and there's been hard times. There has been tough times. There's been super difficult times. There's been tragedy and all sorts of other things. And if I would have quit at any point in there, I couldn't say that I had done my 20 years. I couldn't retire from the military. And in order to take care of my family, that's what I really needed to do. And that's what I'm still currently doing along with this on the side. But the only reason I got this far, and the only reason I got so far with the podcast or with the Warrior's Wallet project that I did and all the things that I've done, is I've just showed up, I've done the work, and I didn't quit. Just those three things are going to take you through most anything you deal with in this life. And it's evident everything that I've done, and it's more than evident in everything that you've done. And I definitely want to, you know, thank you for coming in here and sharing your story today to show how you took what you had in the business world and were able to then give back. And when the situation called for it, you're able to fold them back into each other to work together to get this thing done. And even though the first one didn't go, maybe as planned, you still got the food delivered like you said you were going to. And now that you've kept going, you've streamlined the process down to 59 minutes or 57 minutes, which is just amazing. Hey, if the people out there listening want to get a hold of you and donate to Project Boone or get a hold of you for Firm Media, where can they find you?
Probably the best, fastest way to find me would be Project Boone, B-O-O-N. Project Boone, BOON.org. You know, email would get to me if you went through there. Project Boone is on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So any messages through there would get to me. That's probably the fast way. Firm Media, Hitchburger, those all have websites, but Project Boone is a really fast way to get a hold of me.
Hey, that's awesome, Chris. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing today and talking about, you know, how you were able to deliver services in a real time of need.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.